This feature has been brought to you by Slot Foundation, which needs your support to continue projects like these. Information on this recording and access to other recordings is available online at slot.org.
I think that my bias is that I think he's one of the more interesting American living artists. I think that this ecological wind going through Chelsea when we walked together. And this show was planned probably a year ago, before. We were considering with Jean-Michel and Aaron to do the first opening of this place with William Anastasi. And at that time, for a misunderstanding in my English probably, and his English or whatever, didn't happen. But the real symbol and signal that I wanted to send to Philadelphia was William Anastasi. Thank you, everybody, for coming here. Thank you, Bill, for giving us the pleasure to share with you your art.
No man can know the true or the good unless he abhors the multitude. Giordano Bruno was burned at the stake for saying things like that. Poetry makes nothing happen. W.H. Auden. You can't complain that this stuff is not written in English. It is not written at all. It is not to be read. It is to be looked at and listened to. His writing is not about something. It is that something itself. And that's Samuel Beckett regarding Finnegan's Wake. You do not need to leave your room. Remain sitting at your table and listen. Do not even listen, simply wait. Do not even wait. Be quite still and solitary. The world will freely offer itself to you to be unmasked. It has no choice. It will roll in ecstasy at your feet. Kafka. Matsu, 8th century Buddhist monk. The moment you open your mouth, you're wrong. Duchamp, in 1963, summarized his stance as, quote, doubt in myself, doubt in everything. In the first place, never believing in truth. This goes considerably further than his more famous disclaimers. Each word I tell you is stupid and false. And all in all, I'm a pseudo. That's my characteristic. His every word I tell you is stupid and false is a very clear echo of the famous paradox put forth by Epimenides of Crete when he said all Cretans are liars. If it is so that all Cretans are liars, then since he is from Crete, his statement must be a lie. But if the statement all Cretans are liars is a lie, then it obviously must mean something like the opposite. That is, all Cretans are honest. Although translations disagree, the opening lines of the Tao Te Ching seem to be saying that whatever can be said or named or told is beside the point. That the true way, the eternal way, is outside of the parameters of speech. It is as though the book begins by saying, what I'm trying to say to you cannot be said, at least not in words. In that spirit, I'll continue. I am not here. And everything that can be said must be said. If among you there are some who wish to stay, then by all means stay. What we require is static. But what static requires is that I stop talking, supply any single thought with a crutch, and it will, with a little effort, stand tall and proud. But this transaction between the enabler and the enabled will only eradicate that tedium referred to in some quarters as meditation. You avoided that before I started. And your preferences have not been consulted. But now there is static, and the brief pauses without which it would not qualify as static. I have virtually everything there is to say still left to be said, and that promises to be impenetrable stammering, and I have neither the stomach nor the desire for it. This time outside of time is disorganized. We must not embrace this static. We must study hard to ignore and, if possible, abhor it, or at least learn to pretend convincingly that we do. We have cause to fear this static. We're free to despise it. This is a blind alley talk, for I'm decomposing it just the way I decompose a drawing. It is like a box of bread. We need the box and we need the bread. Or again, it is like an empty box into which at a predetermined moment we pile pre-specified things. As we hiccup and stall, and you are all painfully aware of this by now, a vacuum may occur in this talk. I'm pretty certain one will. If this becomes our lot, let us not stand for it, reject it as something unspeakable, analogous perhaps to a tableau seen through an open manhole, while helplessly riveted to the spot. An open ditch might be more engaging, perhaps too engaging, especially for a South Philadelphian whose powers of resistance are famously feeble. He'll deny that he needs the manhole. He'll insist that one manhole is pretty much like all other manholes, and for South Philadelphian, incapacitating. It is like the empty box, nothing but potential, or is it accomplishment? Heads, it's the former, tails, it's the latter. The open manhole has this about it. At any instant, one may jump over it or in it, although in the latter instance, leaving it may prove to be outside the realm of viable options. It is then, willy-nilly, called home. Our drawing, then, is the realization that we own everything. Nothing, therefore, is a delight, since we already possess it. And thus we understandably tremble lest we lose it. We need not reconstruct the past. It's already here. At any moment, it might disappear and leave the present naked and blushing. Would it be the first time? Only if we forgot that we own it. But since we do, its cost is prohibitive, and we're flat out broke. What I am calling art is once or twice a millennium called emptiness. I myself have called it immateriality. It is the cessation of drawing, of painting, of sculpting. Discontinuity today, when it ceases to be called for, is a concealment of disinterestedness. That is, it demolishes the notion that our anguish lies in possessing nothing. Each moment conceals what might have happened. How similar this sense of formlessness is to that which is beyond memory. Structures and secondary structures, their joyful abandonment of restrictions, their diminution, their whimpering, their amnesia, which is the skepticism eternally attached to all deeds and titles of property. But don't be cowed by what is called ugly. A booming city or a puddle of urine each tries to assert itself, but we can take either or leave either. And when everything has been said, there is still a little more to say. Wittgenstein, not how the world is the mystical, but that it is, which in my view is the most successful attempt at a theology that I've ever come across. There are 2,500 billion suns that they're sure about. Some are 100 times larger than ours happens to be. How many have planets, or how many planets on average they have, we have no idea. It wasn't until 1915 that Duchamp first called the bicycle wheel art. when he made it 2 years earlier, according to the transcript of a conversation with Pierre Caban, he did not consider it art, but just a contraption that he enjoyed spinning because it gave him something that moved in the room, like a fire in a fireplace. George Husselbeck, whose real name was Charles R. Holbeck, said, "The very name of artist is an insult." Pataphysics, according to Roger Shattuck, and by the way, pataphysics is the alternate philosophy for the workings of the universe that Alfred Jarry came up, and those of you who are familiar with Jarry know that. Pataphysics welcomes all scientific theories, they are getting better and better, and treats each one not as a generality, but as an attempt, sometimes heroic and sometimes pathetic, to pin down one point of view as, quote, real, unquote. Students of philosophy may remember the German Hans Wanniger with his philosophy of als ob. Ponderously, yet persistently, he declared that we construct our own system of thought and value and then live as if reality conformed to it. The idea of truth is the most imaginary of solutions. And to repeat, of course, Duchamp, there is no solution because there is no problem. And I don't believe in truth. The work I have done and the work that I'm most known for, and there's a catalog with a picture on the cover, is a picture of a wall that is hanging on a wall that's about 10% larger than the picture. It's a silkscreen picture. But this seems to have come into great popularity now, this idea. This was done a third of a century ago. I've been seeing a lot of exhibits of Kabakov and Emilia Kabakov, and they seem to be obsessed with the idea of putting a museum within a museum, and my grandfather's hut within my grandfather's hut. We saw an exhibit in Düsseldorf. It was a recreation of what he called my grandfather's hut. Last night I asked him, I went to see him and his wife, and I said, "Was that really your grandfather's hut?" And he said, no, it was a fantasy. And then his wife, who now signs the work with her, said it was my grandfather's hut. So it wasn't entirely a fantasy. And we saw this in Düsseldorf. In the gallery, there's a full-size hut. And then you go in it, and there's a little hut in there. And I said, "Eureka." The 1966 picture of the wall on the wall, which was first exhibited in April 1967, no less than that year's wall removals. I have a habit of tearing down parts of walls. And the Philadelphia Museum owns one of the vertical ones, which is titled Issue. No less than that year's wall removals are standing evidence of the artist's stubborn suspicion that even the full truth and reality of that which is limited, distorted, falsified, or at least made to assume a misleading appearance by the normal world of perception and imagination. This work, I don't know who did this work. I mean, I read this stuff, and I must have been demented to have done this. As I was telling various people, I would take 15, 16 big books, most of them big books, a couple of them were small. The Supermail was small, but some of them were absurdly big, to Europe when I would exhibit in Europe. That's how much this had got under my skin. And now I look at it, and it's somebody else's work. And some of it is enjoyable, some of it is pathetic, some of it is heroic, perhaps. At any rate, I started in 1989. I read the Supermail. A friend of mine had given it to me. In fact, Charlie Stuckey had given it to me. He was the head of the 20th Century Collection at the Chicago Art Institute at the time. And we had gotten into a discussion of Jarry, and I barely knew Jarry at the time. And he sent me Le Surma, which is 81 pages long. And he said, see if you see, and this was his idea, he said, see if you see a few things in there that remind you of Duchamp. And I read the book, and I called him up, and I said, Charlie, there is not one page of Le Surma that you cannot very convincingly connect with various works of Duchamp. To be true, most of them are just two works, and that's The Large Glass. But The Large Glass is, I mean, I think there are 81 parts to it, if you read the notes. The Large Glass and The Etant Donné. Most of them are to those two, but some of them are to other works, many other works, but repeatedly, Etant Donné. Yeah. So I said, he said, well, you know, you've really... He said, you may be right. He said, I didn't think there was that much. He said, but why don't you write about that? So I started writing about that, finding connections in Jarry, in the Ubu plays, in Le Surmal, in Faustral. And I was fascinated by the fact that a German scholar, and just shut me up when the time comes, just say, shut up, and then we can go and continue the rest of the stuff. A German scholar named Stoffer, a year or two before Duchamp's death, asked him if Jarry was, he sent him a whole line of questions. And one of the questions was Jarry an influence? And Duchamp answered that question, well, not directly, only in an encouragement that reading him gave me for literature of that time, to continue reading literature of that time. He specifically said an encouragement that I found about literature in 1911. Well, the interesting thing is Jarry was already dead 4 years in 1911, so he was either referring to posthumous advice from Jarry, or he just got his dates mixed. But the fact is that in 1913 or probably 14, he wrote a formula, What is Art? And it reads, Arhe is to art as merdre is to merd. Now, this is an enormous homage to Jarry, because the word merdre will not be found in any dictionary. It's the word merd for shit in French, as most of you know, with an added R, and it was the first word of the map-altering play Ubuwa, which was the beginning of our avant-garde. And as I said to people here, assuming you're excluding Rabelais and Aristophanes, if you're talking about our general neighborhood of time, it was the beginning of our avant-garde, without a question. The other R was to rub the nose of the bourgeois in the audience in this merde. By rolling the R. You wouldn't say shit in a theater at that time under any circumstances, let alone the first word of the play. When I was doing all this research, I can start all over again, because incredibly enough, I did not know what any Joyce scholar does know, and that is that Joyce was coprophiliac. Now, for those of you who are not familiar with the psychological terms, it's someone who has an unnatural sexual fascination with feces, with shit. I didn't know that at the time, amazingly enough. Jean-Michel is just shaking his head. How could I have not known that? But so I did this blind from the back door, as it were. Not knowing one of the most incredibly important things, that merde is the beginning. And in Ulysses, in the most powerful scene by far, when he's half drunk in a whorehouse, Stephen Dedalus, who is Joyce, and he sees his dead mother accusing him of very, very bad things, you know, like, indirectly accusing him of killing her, probably, at least in his own mind. And finally he says, shite, which is the Irish word for shit. It's the English word for shit with one additional letter, as merdre is the French word for shit with one additional letter. So the thought that Joyce was coprophiliac, you won't see that in these notes, because I didn't know it until some time later. I would have to rewrite everything in the context of that. It would make it all much easier, as a matter of fact. But I started thinking about coprophilia, and if I have a few more minutes, I think it's interesting. Now, Joyce was sexually fascinated by what everyone finds ugly. And except for vomit, there's probably nothing that is more universally abhorred than shit, right? But it's kind of interesting. He was a dandy. He loved, as soon as he had money, even though it wasn't his own money, he was, a couple of women supported him, as a matter of fact. And he didn't go to bed with either of them, which makes it even worse. Velvet jacket, rings. He was an absolute dandy. Now, that's fascinating to me. It's the absolute, the yin and the yang. On the outside, he was elegant, dandy. Eric Satie was a very similar case. He was also a dandy. He didn't have women supporting him, so he had to buy his stuff at a thrift shop, but he still dressed very, very meticulously. He never let anyone into his home. They thought it was just because he was poor. But when he died, and they went into his home, they found feces all along the baseboard. They were blown away by this because he was the antithesis of that. Now, whether he was corpophiliac, I've never read a biography of Satie. I should. So I started thinking about, if you read Ulysses in Finnegan's Wake is difficult. Read it aloud, page at a time, and it becomes incredible music. But if you start thinking about Ulysses, everything is beautiful. Everything is beautiful. And maybe that's the lucky side of being corpophiliac. If you can find shit beautiful, if shit turns you on, everything else is easy, right? So I can write another 2,000 pages in the context of Joyce very easily. About Joyce being coprophiliac. Satie, at least having some fascination with the same subject, and then someone who I told this to recently, who's very, and I think she's the curator of Wesleyan's, or Davidson Art Center, maybe someone else, I'm getting mixed up here, but someone told me right away that on the internet, Easterners, Chinese and Japanese, seem to be fascinated. They seem to be corpophiliac, she said, or very, very often. It all fits if you think of the elegance of the culture. If you think of Chinese cooking, which was the first cooking we had. They were the first ones to be affluent enough to cook. The Greeks got it from them. I like to say that the Greeks did everything first, and the Chinese did it before them. And if you look it up, you see it's pretty much true. I mean, the Chinese were so far ahead culturally that it makes your mind bog. If you want to see really what great painting is about, you look at somewhere around 900 AD, 400 years before Giotto, what was happening in China. There's one other little thing if I have a moment. Oh, I would love to if I could find it. Aaron, are you the guy that keeps the time? Can I talk another couple minutes? Let me find one other thing.
On February 28th, Anastasia and Jean-Michel will engage in a public conversation at the Rosenbach Museum, which is downtown. And as many of you know, they have the fair copy manuscript of Ulysses. So.
Now, of course, I may not be able to find it. This isn't what I had in mind, but it's very connected with what I'm talking about here. I showed 1 gallon of high gloss enamel paint poured in an exhibit about Buddhism in Snug Harbor. It's still there. It'll be there for a few more months. That's in Staten Island. And the recipe for it, this goes back to 66. The year that I put the picture of the wall on the wall, which was clearly a response to Duchamp. If you have a ready-made, well, what better ready-made, I thought, than the wall on which the painting goes. I like to say that 10 minutes after I got that idea, although I don't remember how long after, but it was certainly in that period, I decided that the only thing left to do was tear a part of a wall down, and that was the first wall removal. And I did one in the Bikert Gallery, Klaus Curtis's office, and I did one in John Weber's office at the Zwan Gallery. And by the time I did it at Bikert, it was probably 1967. Well, the recipe for 1 gallon industrial high gloss enamel poured reads, with a small cup, soberly pour 1 gallon of paint against a wall as near the ceiling as possible. And then I had to write this this paragraph for the exhibit about the Buddhist exhibit. This work proceeds from the mundane phenomenon of liquid finding its own level. A related work from 1963 played with the same idea. It's titled Sink. Set a rectangular piece of hot rolled steel level on a floor, pour on it a measure of tap water so that the resulting pond holds its position short of overflow. Each time the water evaporates, repeat, end quote. And a work from 1961 had aspects that look forward to the two mentioned, relief, which consists of a rectangular slab 18 by 18 by 2.5 inches high, of freshly poured concrete on which the artist urinated, leaving an imprint to harden and perpetuate itself into the surface. Also from 1961, the connected series, Homage to the Unknown, was begun. Here the artist made pencil renderings of sheets of used toilet tissue. I'm not corpophiliac, but that's the work I was doing in 1961. If I was corpophiliac, I wouldn't be doing that work, probably. The 9th century Zen master Lin Chi said, if you meet a Buddha, kill the Buddha. One interpretation of many, don't make a god of Buddha, reject hierarchies. An artist might focus on aesthetic hierarchies regarding the varieties of beauty that can be found at every corner of the physical world if the search is done with an open spirit. Buddha as God implies a greater beauty than nature could supply, and therefore it's rejected. In the same era, a famed Buddhist teacher, Hakui Ekaku, upon being asked, what is the Buddha, replied, a dried shit stick. As Kill the Buddha may be rejecting hierarchies from the top down, this master is perhaps rejecting them from the bottom up. If beauty can be found anywhere in the physical world, then to accept the negative assumptions of, quote, cultivated society, unquote, regarding a natural bodily function would be to ignore an edifying potentiality. Composer John Cage said, I've never heard any sound that I didn't enjoy, unquote. If we are sufficiently unfettered when receiving, this unstinting embrace might want to range beyond the organs of hearing to the other senses as well. That's the end of that text. And I think I've taken enough time. Thank you.